This is Ron Osborne, Radio Buzz 101. I've got the pleasure of hanging out with the guys from Better Than Ezra here at the Ridgefield Playhouse in Connecticut. Thanks for having me backstage tonight.
We're giddy to be at the Ridgefield Playhouse and on Radio Buzz 101.
You guys really changed the music scene in the 90s.
Well, that's a very bold comment. I like to think so.
Absolutely. Especially with Rosalia.
You might be the first person to just come right out and say it like that.
Absolutely.
I do know that. I don't think we've ever been, that's the first time we've ever heard that. But the reality is that a lot of bands kind of after us were very influenced, by the band. And there's a long list of bands that have cited us as an influence. It's kind of cool. They're all bigger than us now.
See? Yeah. I mean,
One Republic, The Fray, a lot of bands. I'm like, huh, great.
But, Rosalia, In the Blood, Good. Every radio station you turn on is playing these songs over and over again. People are digging them. People are loving them.
It was a lot of momentum and excitement with that album, the reality is, we were together 7 years before that record came out and, just toiling away trying to get signed. And I think that, we were just kind of, that album was really basically a reflection of all our influences. Yeah. From classic rock that you can hear to R.E.M. and the Pixies and stuff like that. So I think it captured a time, so maybe that's why it influenced people.
Who's your favorite band?
All time?
Yeah.
Probably U2.
A tough question. I think it changes as you grow older.
It does, yeah. And mine has changed a couple of times.
What was the first band that came in your mind?
Rush.
Hey, there you go.
And
you're not a drummer. I think they're most known for,
No, we're huge Rush fans.
Yeah, awesome stuff.
That's like when you're in high school.
Right.
When we were in high school or whatever, that was, they were gods.
Yeah.
But now, I guess things change. What's interesting, though, is, we've been doing this long enough now to understand how difficult it is to maintain this life. And
this
so,
and
like you too, the fact that they're still around and relevant, I mean, just think about how difficult that probably was.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing.
And probably still is.
Yeah.
It's a lot of touring. It takes a lot out of you.
Well, they tour a little bit better than us.
Yeah. They're on a 747.
And they have a 747. You guys have a tour bus and not a...
It's not here. I mean, we're not... This is just kind of... We actually are doing this show tonight because we had to make up a date in Westbury, New York.
Oh, okay.
And luckily, we got to book this show. But no tour bus. We're just flying for these dates.
In terms of influences, early... let's go with Tom, all right? Early influences.
Okay. Early influences.
Early.
First
start.
I mean, I think, when I first started, Moving Pictures changed my life, I think. Because really before that, I was interested in music, but I was a little bit of a late bloomer. Like, I didn't start playing guitar till 12, which is really kind of late for a musician. What?
I coughed to mask my gum.
I thought he was coughing to mask the comment. No, okay.
I mean, I don't what age were you when you started?
I wasn't making any comment about your age. I was truly getting some dinting ice. That wasn't a
slight on my 12. I was 12.
I think, I started really early. I started really early, like 8 or 9.
No kidding.
Yeah, I was in second grade. I played a guitar in this, It's a Small World After All, elementary musical.
Yeah.
It was backing my class. So from very early age, I was playing.
For me, it was my friends had a band, and they didn't have a bass player.
Oh, you're kidding, really?
No, that's how it worked out.
So you kind of just walked into the scene?
Totally.
Wow, no kidding. Wow, yeah. That's interesting. What was your first guitar?
It was a Fender P bass copy, like a Memphis. It was blonde. It was blonde.
Was it?
Yeah, blonde.
You still have
the white
it?
Picker. I don't. I sold it, but I know the guy who has it.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah. So it's still around. It's
in
not
Shreveport.
Like it's long gone.
Yeah, it's in Shreveport.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was okay. I mean, it was a starter bass.
Yeah. What do you play now? What's your favorite?
Play a P bass that's a custom shop that I've kind of, modified over the years. And it's really, I get a lot of compliments on it. And it's
nice.
I've actually done a search to try and find another one just to have a backup, and I can't. And apparently it was a prototype that the custom shop made for, what's the guy, the surf guitar guy? Dick Dale.
Dale, yeah.
There's a Dick Dale model that's the same color, but it's a guitar. It's left-handed.
No
it's kidding. The only one that I've found that's even close to that. So I can't find another one, is what I'm saying. The color scheme, the whole thing, yeah.
It's wow.
Whatever.
As a vocalist, focusing as a vocalist, who was your very early influence?
Elton John. Yeah. I mean, my dad got my brother and I, my older brother and I, a stereo when we lived in Atlanta. And
45s?
No, he got us five albums. He got us Led Zeppelin, Houses of the Holy,
nice.
Grand Funk Railroad. We're an American band where you open up the album and they're all naked behind hay bales.
Yeah.
Remember that one? It was a gold album. You could, wow. You know, Sly and the Family Stone, uh-huh. The one where he's in the white cover and the black leather, Canned Heat. And Elton John, Goodbye, Yellow Brick Road. And that really kind of informed, I mean, I was in love with that record. And, you know, it was a double album. Just knew every song by heart. I would go in my room and play that record over and over again. And so I still reference his melodies and stuff. When I get stuck writing sometimes when you're writing and it's just not happening, you just have to go and listen to some great music to kind of just get your head back into the zone, mm-hmm. of good melody. So that was kind of my early influence. Then I started early 80s. I started listening to alternative music, mm-hmm. You know, and I got into R.E.M., The Smiths, The Pixies.
Wow.
You know, and that.
Oh, I
yeah,
love
World Party. You know,
Carl Wallinger.
Yeah.
It's great.
And, so that really informed, my musical style as far as singing.
Guys have planned that's super secret you can tell me about?
Super secret. Yes.
Nice.
Yeah, that's cool. I've noticed a lot of vinyl coming out over the past couple of years.
Do you know that the vinyl market is growing?
It is getting
bigger. It's very small.
But and I sold my turntables.
It's very loyal, though. It is. The people that like to buy that stuff, they will seek it out. Yep. So it's cool.
Yep.
It's, you know, young, you know, kids are getting into it because, you know, there's, it was, as we know, it was an experience getting that album, and it was substantial, and you poured over the liner notes and the artwork. Remember, there were companies like Hypnosis that did all the Pink Floyd, you know? Yeah. So it's a great thing because some things go the way of the dinosaurs and they just really weren't that special. Some things disappear and it's really a loss for everybody. One of those are record stores and the LP, that format, that size. So it's nice.
Remember Record Town?
Yeah, Record Town.
Peaches.
Well, Peaches, of course. Yes. Remember Music Land? Did they have Music
Land? Music Land, yes.
That was one that was just hadn't, it wasn't great.
Peaches was a very cool store. There was one in Connecticut.
Yeah.
Peaches Records.
Yeah, I think we actually visited that one time. We played Toads or something. It's it's bizarre because, you know, our first album was on a cassette.
Yeah.
We didn't have CDs.
Right. There were no CDs.
It was 90.
Clean. Well, there were CDs. We just couldn't afford them.
Yeah. It just wasn't the technology. Right. You know, it was up and coming at the time. And,
yep.
And it's just like we've seen, you know, many iterations of the music business already.
Yep. Yep. You know, I still have a cassette deck.
Do you really?
I don't. I use it for nothing. I gave away a CD player to a friend of mine who wanted to use it in his garage. I said, I don't need it anymore. I've got bins of CDs. But I've got multiple computers with which to burn, you know, to put on the air or do something with. You know, I don't club DJ or anything like that. But
my friend has a car that has a cassette player in it. It's not a new car.
Nice.
And I just screw with him.
Oh, do you really? Well,
like, here, play. Let's rock out. And I'll open his glove box. There's an old cassette.
Could have been an 8-track.
Could have been an 8-track.
Right, right. Could have been worse. Vinyl. Anything new
that you're working on? So super secret. Okay. We know the album's coming out. This is something we're really excited about. We haven't put out vinyl in probably 13 years. So longer than that. I was thinking Closer came out on vinyl. And this is it's blue vinyl.
Oh, wow.
It looks really cool.
It does. The artwork's actually very cool. It's neat.
So are you planning blue, like a see-through vinyl kind of thing?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. With great artwork. Who's going to do the artwork?
It's called Young and Sick. It is a graphic artist out of the UK. He did the Maroon 5 artwork. And he's done a lot of big albums.
Yeah.
Our management, our manager manages Maroon 5 and some other bands. And so he was like, let's try this guy. When we were looking at artwork and we dug him.
Nice. When is that set to be released? Maybe sometime this year?
September 9th.
September 9th.
Oh, yeah.
Title yet?
All Together Now.
All Together Now. New album.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it'll be available on CD, I would imagine.
CD.
But not cassette.
CD, vinyl, and obviously all the streaming services and digital.
Nice. Can't wait. Thank you very much for having me backstage.
Thank you for having us.
Kevin from Better Than Ezra. Tom, thank you also.
It's a pleasure.
I can't wait to see the show tonight and jam up my favorite tune, In the Blood.
Yay.
I love it.
You know, we do a fun version of it.
We do.
Do you really?
Yeah, it's a little different than what you're used to.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, that's going to throw
bad way.
No, that's good. That's going to throw me for a loop because I listened to it 4 times on the way up.
Oh, good.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. I've always loved that song.
And, you know, it's funny. Sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah, no,
you know, you were talking about Deluxe. If you A/B Deluxe against other albums, any of the albums of its time, it's a very indie, lo-fi recording. We did it on half-inch tape on a Ramsa 16-track board.
Did you really?
It was not... It's pro quality, but it's just...
It's prosumer
quality. You know, it does sound very clean and real. It doesn't sound like there's too much...
It does sound real, for sure.
Right. And I would have never known that it's on prosumer.
All the drums were cut in one long, long night.
Wow. Very long night.
Like 15 hours we spent at that studio.
It was in a cave.
Wow.
It was in a rehearsal complex in East Los Angeles.
Oh, no kidding. Wow. Crazy. Nothing on that album recorded, say, hometown, Baton Rouge?
Or... No, we did that whole album in L.A.
Oh, wow.
We were all living out there. And it was a series of demos we all did with Dan Rothschild, who's Paul Rothschild's son. Paul Rothschild produced, you know, The Doors, Janis Joplin, Mamas and the Papas. And as a result, his son, you know, Paul passed away, but his son Dan lives on their 18 acres right in Laurel Canyon. I mean,
the land on the top of the mountain.
Millions. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Very cool. I can't wait to see the show tonight. Again, Tom.
Thanks again.
Kevin, thank you very much.
Our pleasure.
Ron Osborne, RadioBuzz101.com.
And that's the reason that I'm asking. Hey.